Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on contract penalty clause when we come back. Well, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." You'll read that in Acts 5, verse 29. You know, that's a revolutionary concept. And it's impossible to put into practice unless you know the law yourself. Now, can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three authorities that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The first is the First Amendment to our federal constitution. That's number one. The second authority is Public Law 97-280, also known as Statute 96-1211. And the third is a case called Seeger versus United States. That's the third authority. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census or public school, social security, vaccinations, or one of the many other laws of the scripture that conflicts with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look it up, research it out, or code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion into your rights? Now, if you don't know the law of the scripture or you don't know the law of the state, you're in no position to challenge either one. So if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the penal clause in the contract. The contract, let me refresh your recollection here a little bit from last night until tonight. The contract was recorded by Moses in the Bible in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, verse 8. About 4 or 5 chapters there. And that contains the agreement that was hammered out by Moses and God, presented to the people, 3.5 million of them, down at the bottom of Mount Sinai. And in verse 7, this is Exodus 24, verse 7, the people said, "All that the Eternal has said, we'll do and be obedient." Now, I know right away you're going to say, "Yeah, but I wasn't there and I didn't agree to that. Besides that, I'm a Catholic or a Lutheran or a Jew, and that doesn't apply to me." Well, bear with me, partner, because I think it does apply to you. I think as a matter of law, it applies to you. And that's because it's called an adhesion contract. Contracts of adhesion. You don't have to have the terms and conditions of a contract read to you, nor do you have to know or understand them or even know that they exist to have them apply to you. I mean, you got a driver's license and you got 2,000 traffic codes, statutes, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices that apply to you as a licensed driver. And I dare say that none of you people know all of them. And the next time you get a ticket, why don't you take it into the judge and say, "Judge, I didn't know about that law." And see if the judge doesn't say to you this old axiom, "Ignorance of the law is no excuse." So just because you don't know what the law is doesn't mean it doesn't apply to you and doesn't have a penalty that applies. This contract, remember, was negotiated many, many years ago, 1329 BC, near as I reckon. And it was agreed to by your great-great-granddaddy, and remember that inures to the heirs and the signs forever, and you're one of those heirs and the signs forever if you're living in one of these 12 Israelite countries. You know, Australia, New Zealand, the United States and Canada, Germany, Switzerland, England, Ireland, France. You know, I named off those Israelite countries, and you can say, well, I'm a Chinese, and I don't apply that law to me. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Just because you're a Chinese living in San Francisco, you know, in Chinatown, you're not telling me now that the traffic laws of California don't apply to you. Do you? If you're a tourist from England, you come over here to the United States, are you telling me that you're going to drive on the left side of the road? I mean, come on, kids. Let's grow up and get real. The laws apply to you even though you didn't vote for them. You didn't vote for George Bush, but you came from England, and you're going to drive on the right side of the road over here just like we do, or else you're going to get in a lot of trouble. And when I go to England, I got to drive on the left side of the road, and it's obnoxious as I'll get out, but you know, that's the way you people behave over there, and so then I got to conform. I just wanted to share with you that, you know, just because Karl Marx came up with the Communist Manifesto back in 1848 doesn't mean that the Ten Commandments have been abolished. The Ten Commandments, the boys and girls, that law was agreed to by your great-great-granddaddy and inured to the heirs and the signs forever before Karl Marx was born. And that contract takes precedent. You weren't at Independence Hall in Philadelphia in 1787, but the Constitution of the United States applies to you. And if you want to test it, why don't you just go out there and violate some portion of the Constitution? Do it in front of a cop so that you can have witnesses present and see what happens to you. I think you're going to find out that the Constitution of the United States applies to the Chinese in Chinatown in San Francisco, just like they apply to the people in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and any place else in the United States. Now, we were taking a look here at Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, the two penal clause chapters. And when you violate the terms and conditions of a contract, which I explained to you last time, there's a penalty clause. There's a penal clause. And Leviticus 26 has the benefits and the penalties. And Deuteronomy 28 has the benefits and it has the penalties. So I thought we'd start here with Leviticus 26. I started with Deuteronomy 28, and I'm over here to Leviticus 26, reading through the penal clauses, and I was on verse 27, where it says, "And if you will not for all of this hearken unto me, but you walk contrary unto me," you know, give me the finger, "I'm going to walk contrary unto you in fury. Then I even I will chastise you seven times for your sins." Notice the word fury here. I mean, you know, religious people, I talk about sweet Jesus, you know, away in the manger, and about how Jesus loves you, and you know, they get kind of emotional and their voices kind of break. Jesus loves you, you know. And this guy says he's going to punish you in fury. That doesn't sound very good to me. And he says, "I'm going to punish you seven times." That's mentioned four times here in this chapter. In verse 18, he said seven times. Verse 21, he says seven times. Verse 23, says seven times. And verse 28, he says seven times. Can you picture Hurricane Katrina seven times worse, or seven of those Hurricane Katrinas? Seven times more for your sins. Now, for your sins. Sin is a transgression of the law. Transgression of the law is a violation of the terms and conditions of the contract. All law, remember, is contract. Contract. You got a driver's license, and then you got a criminal statute, and it says if you drive drunk, we're going to put you in jail. So you go out and you drive drunk, they catch you, and they put you in jail. Well, you agreed to it when you signed the driver's license. It was an agreement. That's what a contract is. It's an agreement. And a contract doesn't have to be a meeting of the minds. It can be imposed upon you. Imposed. That's called an adhesion contract, whether you like it or not. We impose upon you Englishmen that you drive on the right side of the road here in America, whether you like it or not. It's an adhesion contract. You get a driver's license from England, and you guys drive on the left side of the road over here, you're going to drive on the right side of the road. It's an adhesion contract, pure and simple. Okay. God comes along and says, I got the original contract, dates back to 1329 B.C., and it inures to the heirs and the signs forever. You're one of the heirs and the signs, or you're a Chinese visiting or an Englishman visiting, and by God, it applies to you. Okay? All right. Now, if you don't think it applies to you, that's fine with me. I'm not here to convince you that I'm right. I'm a reporter. I'm here to report facts. And what you do with them is up to you. You Englishman, you want to drive on the, left side of the road? Get after it. Don't let me get in your way. I'm not going to try to convince you that you ought to drive on the right side of the road. I'm just a reporter telling you when you come to America, law requires you to drive on the right side of the road. Now, if you want to get uppity about it, and depends on how uppity you get. I mean, if you tell the highway cop over here, you know, I'm from England, I drive on the left side of the road, he'll punish you, and then he'll punish you, and then he'll punish you, and pretty soon they're going to punish you with fury. I mean, they'll get real serious after a while. You keep doing it, you know, then they get real serious. All right, well, God's the same way. He says, you know, you keep giving me the finger here, and I'm going to get real serious with you. Get real nasty. So I wanted to share that with you, because religious people, they're thinking about sweet Jesus over here, and I want to tell you that sweet Jesus is about as mean as a junkyard dog. Well, I mean, if you just take a look at what he tells you, then I assume we're talking about sweet Jesus here. Then he goes on, he says a little bit more here. He says in verse 29, you shall eat the flesh of your sons, and the flesh of your daughters shall you eat. He says, I'm going to destroy your high places and cut down your images and cast your carcasses upon the carcasses of your idols, and my soul shall abhor you. Do you know what a carcass is? Carcass. I am going to cast your carcass on the carcass of your idol. Okay. Well, we Americans are idol worshippers here. In this country, we have idols. The Washington Monument is an idol. We have 50 state capitals. Those are 50 idols. We have a federal capitol building. That's an idol. See, an idol is a god. A god is a sovereign. A sovereign is a lawmaker. Look it up in the dictionary. I didn't write that, you know. A sovereign. People, you know, they run around talking about their, I'm a sovereign. Okay, well, if you're a sovereign, then you're a lawmaker. Now, I'm not much of a sovereign. I don't have very much sovereignty. I got a little bit, not very much. I don't run around yelling and screaming at people that I'm a sovereign. And people that vote sure as hell ought not to call themselves sovereigns. Those are wards of the state, people that vote. See, a person that votes is voting for a representative. Well, a representative is a guardian in a guardian-ward relationship. Well, children, if you've got a guardian, you're not a master. You know, you're a servant. You are politically incompetent. You're unable to manage or to handle your own political needs and necessities. Okay, now, I don't have very much sovereignty, but I'm able to handle all of my political needs without Kit Bond. So I don't vote, and I don't participate in democracy, and I don't participate in the electoral process. Now, I'm a monarchist. See, and I practice the law of this God over here. And you know, just wanted to point this out, that when Jesus returns, he's not going to be running for president. He's not going to be soliciting your votes. There isn't going to be any more democracy when Jesus returns and sets up a world-ruling government in Jerusalem. So if you've got it in your mind that you're gonna be voting for Jesus over here, I think you're gonna be disappointed in the whole political process. So in order to get a jump on that, I decided, well, I might as well become a monarchist up front and give up on this democracy crap, because that's just what it is. Just so much crap. Just take a look at the results that you got from this practice of democracy and ask yourself, are you satisfied with a national debt of $8 trillion? Or are you satisfied with the war in Iraq? Are you satisfied with Social Security being upside down? Or Medicare going bankrupt? I mean, you know, it's all part and parcel of democracy, isn't it? Federal Reserve and paper money, stock market, fraud and graft and corruption and You know, you can have it if you want. I'm not trying to get in the way of your happiness and success, but I wanted to point out to you that this sweet Jesus down here says, I'm going to destroy your high places. I'm going to destroy the Capitol in Washington. I'm going to knock down, cut down your images. I'm going to knock down the Statue of Liberty and that erect penis that you call the Washington Monument. And then I'm going to throw your carcass on those idols. Now, boys and girls, carcasses are dead bodies. I'm going to throw your dead body on the Washington Monument and on the steps of your Capitol for worshiping, practicing these laws. That's verse 29 and 30. Now, verse 29, he says, you're going to eat the flesh of your sons and the flesh of your daughters. Children, that's cannibalism, and in the worst-case scenario, which I can think of, is Stalingrad. There was 237 recorded cases of cannibalism in Stalingrad in the Thousand-Day Siege. That's how rare cannibalism is. And here he tells you very plainly, he says, you people are going to be eating your sons and daughters. You're not going to be eating the dead bodies of your neighbors and friends that are dead. You're going to be eating your own sons and daughters. Now, that's starvation. On a scale that none of us have ever experienced here in the United States. And I suspect that you Canadians and Australians haven't witnessed that either. Now, there's your God over there. He's telling you now. Well, this is maybe the God that you didn't know about, never heard of before, but I thought I'd share it with you. In verse 31, he says, I'm going to make your cities waste, and I'm going to bring your sanctuaries into desolation, and I'm not going to smell the savor of your sweet odors. I'm going to bring the land into desolation, and your enemies which dwell therein shall be astonished at it. I'm going to bring your land into desolation, and your enemies are going to be astonished when they see the destruction and desolation here. Now, I've heard some people report on that Hurricane Katrina. I've seen the pictures. I've seen the Gulf Coast. Now, were you astonished? That was pretty astonishing. And he says, that's the tip of the iceberg because I'm going to punish you seven times more. So by the time you add seven more of those Katrinas, I think you'll really be astonished. Now, notice what he said. He said, I'm going to do this because I want to reform you. Why does he want to reform us? Now listen to this. Verse 32, I'm going to bring the land into desolation. Your enemies will be astonished at it. I'm going to scatter you among the heathen, and I'm going to draw out a sword after you. That's war. And your land shall be desolate, and your cities made waste. And then shall the land enjoy her Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate, and you be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy your Sabbaths. You know, we're not practicing land Sabbaths over here. Land Sabbaths and Jubilees. And if we're going to be in our enemy's lands, then our enemies are the Chinese, or the Iraqis, or the Iranians, or whoever we go to war against, then it looks like we're going to be deported. We're going to see that in Deuteronomy 28. There's a deportation coming up here. We're going to be deported to our enemy's lands. Our land is going to be desolate. Boy, just picture this. 300 million people live in the United States of America, and it's going to be depopulated. Ezekiel had a little to say about that, talking about these hairs, you know. God told him to cut the hair off of his head. And he cut the hair. I said, now divide that into three. And he said, this first batch of hair, one-third, is going to be destroyed in this war. Second one is going to be destroyed by famine and pestilence. And the third is going to be carried away captive. I'm going to tell you a little something about the methodology by which the United States will be destroyed. But I wanted to remind you that you Europeans over there and you Australians and New Zealanders and Canadians are all in the same boat with us, you know. You know, really, the whole world is in the same boat because everybody's got the same economy. We got a world economy now, which is anchored by the United States dollar, and the United States dollar is about to take a dive. And when it does, it's going to affect everybody's currency, everybody's jobs, everybody's standard of living, everybody's well-being. Then you got this New World Order gang over here, headed by such people as George Bush and George Cheney, and I'm sure they mean well. Got your best interest at heart, but they subscribe to this Global 2000 program, which calls for the reduction of Earth's population by 90%. You know, that kind of sounds like Armageddon to me. I mean, that just kind of sounds like, you know, when you're killing 90% of the people on planet Earth, you're getting down to biblical destruction, aren't you? Getting down to Revelation 6, where he says, I'm going to destroy the fourth part of man. And George Bush says, he's not going to sit still for those Iranians having a nuclear weapon, and the Iranians say that they're not going to sit still for George Bush. Kind of sounds like the immovable object and the irresistible force, doesn't it? And then you got God over here saying, I'm going to deal with you in fury. And the reason that you're going to be dealt with fury is because of this breach of contract. And one of the penalties with the breach of contract is deportation from the land. So the penalty then for Sabbath breaking is deportation. It's exile. The destruction of the nation. But it's worse than that. You get exiled. Now, you know, Germany was destroyed in World War II, but they didn't exile the people. Some of them they exiled to Siberia, but, you know, as a general rule, they didn't take all the people out of Germany and move them someplace else. Now, that's been done historically. And that's exactly what these two Penal Clause chapters say that God is going to do. And it's never been done before to us, not on this kind of a scale. So, again, he goes on to say in verse 30-35, as long as it lies desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you dwelled upon it. Can you people ever remember practicing a land Sabbath or a jubilee? He said, you know, the land is going to rest because it didn't rest when you dwelled in it. When you dwelt in it, past tense. It's going to rest when I deport you from it. So when I go back here to the drought in the West and Hurricane Katrina, you know, and the floods. And did you see this recent flood up in the Northeast? Raining, you know, 10, 15 inches a day. There was a lady up there. She had an awning business. And they said, are you going to stay here in this awning business? She said, this is the third flood that we've had here in a few years. I don't know, 5 or 10 years. She says, no, we're going to move. Now listen, rain in due season doesn't include floods and doesn't include drought. Rain in due season is the right amount at the right time. Hurricane Katrina is not rain in due season. And that flood up in the Northeast with a high sitting off out here in the Atlantic Ocean and then warm, moist Gulf air coming up the Appalachian Mountains, and then it hits this front and then dumps all that rain on Washington D.C. and Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's not rain in due season. So I said I'm going to make it rain on one spot and I'm going to make it dry on another one. Now you're watching these prophecies come to pass right in front of your eyeballs. You know that. Now you haven't been deported yet, but then he hasn't punished you 7 times yet. You know, he says, I'm going to punish you in fury. If you won't be reformed by this, then, do you remember that word reformed over here? He says, and if you will not for all of this hearken unto me, but you walk contrary unto me, then I'm going to walk contrary unto you, and also in fury, and I will chastise you 7 times for your sins. Hey, listen, that's getting kind of serious. In verse 23, remember he said this, if you'll not be reformed by me by these things. Reformed. You people down there in New Orleans are supposed to be reformed by that hurricane. Now I suspect that Mardi Gras is one of your problems down there. Roman Catholicism doesn't help you any. But you know, even if you're a Roman Catholic and you wear that political identification, you still have a duty to practice the Ten Commandments. You still have a duty to practice thou shalt not commit adultery. You still have a duty to practice thou shalt not steal. You know, you can't walk around and say, well, I'm a Catholic, so I'm delivered under these abominations. But, you know, if you're a Mormon, you still have a duty to practice. You shall have no other gods before me, and to practice the Sabbath day. Now, we Americans, we have our own Sabbaths, and we have our own holy days. We have the 4th of July. That's one of our holy days, and Labor Day, and Memorial Day. We, you know, we have our Sabbaths, and then God can have his Sabbaths. We practice Sunday. God can practice Saturday. I want to submit to you, boys and girls, that our agreement with our God in 1329 BC was that we would practice all of his laws. That contract inured to the heirs and assigns forever. Those heirs and assigns are still alive today. Forever is not up yet. I don't know how long it is, but I do know it's not up. And we've got that same duty. Now, you don't have to practice it, and you haven't been, but you're going to suffer these penalties if you don't, and you're going to suffer these penalties in fury if you don't. So I woke up to that some years back, and I said, you know, maybe I better clean up my act. I cleaned up my act, and things have been going a lot better for me than they were. I had the same kind of problems that everybody else was having. Nothing seemed to work right. Now everything's going pretty well. Let me give you a little bit on fear here. Verse 36, he says, and upon them that are left alive of you, among them that are left alive of you, I will send a faintness into their hearts, into the lands of their enemies, and the sound of a shaking leaf shall chase them. And they shall flee as fleeing from a sword, and they shall fall when none pursues them. Boys and girls, that reminds me of Homeland Security and our airplanes and airlines and our president saying, I'm here to protect the American people. This level of fear isn't here yet, but they're trying to instill it in us. And by the time you get deported and you're sent off to Ethiopia, Libya, and Egypt, you know, I'm sure that you'll be pretty fearful and timid, because by then 2/3 of us will be dead. God having cast our carcasses upon our idols, remember. So I thought I'd share that with you and say, now wait a minute, are you really sure that we want to continue on the way we're continuing right now, or maybe we ought to be reformed by some of this? Maybe we ought to start looking ahead. Now, the war in Iraq isn't going well, and there's another war coming up with Iran. I mean, if you can't see the war coming up with Iran, you know you got to be blind, deaf, and dumb. You know, it's kind of like looking at World War II. World War II was on the horizon as early as 1935. By 1938, it was pretty obvious. By 1939, you couldn't miss it. You'd have to be in denial. Same thing, you know, is true now with the war in Iraq. You know, that war was coming on and coming on and coming on for a long time. Now, Korea was a surprise. But I don't think that World War II was a surprise, or at least it shouldn't have been. And I don't think the war in Iraq was a surprise, and I don't think the coming war in Iran should be any big surprise. And you got to remember, those Iranians are allied now with the Chinese. And remember this 200 million man army coming down to Megiddo? And you got the United States and the West on one side, and you got Russia and China and the East on the other side, and they're fighting over oil, and they're going to come into Jerusalem. We're going to have a 200 million man army and a great battle where the blood is going to, at least in some place there, rise to the level of the horse's bridle. Not that anybody's going to be riding a horse out there, but there's going to be blood pooled up out there somewhere around 3 feet deep. Now, that's a bunch of blood, but then there's a bunch of people. I remember I was over at Gettysburg. That was a real sight. They had a little round top or a little round tree or something like that, a little round something. And they had a creek down here at the bottom. And then this guide was leading us through there, and he said the blood ran in that creek. This little stream, you can jump across it, but the blood ran in that stream for 3 days, he said. 6,000 people died on that hillside. I looked at that hillside. It's not all that big. I got a hillside like that down here on my farm down the hall. I looked at that and I said, my God, you know, 6,000 people leaking a gallon of blood is a semi-trailer load of blood. It's like a semi-truck dropping gasoline off at your 7-Eleven store. That's how much blood would be in 6,000 gallons. You know, that was quite a sight, you know, to me. Now, do you just picture 200 million people spilling a little blood out there on the battlefield? Now, I guess you could find 3 feet of blood out there somewhere. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here. Let's get off this morose stuff and let's get on to something a little lighter. And let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967 to ask for yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, well, they're mine and mine alone. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Tonight's program, we're talking about the Contract Penalty Clause. Contract Penalty Clause. If you joined us late, we got a contract. The contract is with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It applies to all 12 of the tribes located in Western Europe, the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. I covered those in program number one. We got a deal. We got a contract. It inures to the heirs and the signs forever. Forever isn't up yet. And if you're a stranger living in our land, it applies to you in the same way that the traffic laws apply to you. So, before Karl Marx and communism infested our lands, we had the Ten Commandments and the law of God that infested our lands, and we have a prior duty to that law. We're in breach of that contract, and we're in the process of being punished. We're in the process of reaping what we sowed. Now, the two chapters that deal with this punishment, deal with this breach of contract and the penalties, is Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. And the two chapters start off with the 33 articulable benefits. Here's what you're going to get if you practice my law. And then it finishes it up and it says, well, here's what I'm going to do to you if you breach the contract. And I'm just here to tell you that we're in breach of contract. We Americans are in violation of 82 laws. We still practice 51. Or we still give lip service to, or we still practice 51 to some degree. But we're in breach of contract on 82. Now, I submit to you that if we were practicing 82 and in violation of 51, we'd be in better position. It'd be over half. We're now practicing less than half the law, and we're starting to get some pretty severe punishment. So in verse 38, after we get away from this fear thing, you shall perish among the heathen, and the land of your enemies shall eat you up, and they that are left of you shall pine away in their iniquity in their enemies' lands, and also in the iniquity of their fathers shall they pine away with them. You know, we follow our fathers. Our fathers were Catholics and we're Catholics. Our fathers were Lutherans and we're Lutherans. Our fathers were Democrats and we're Democrats. Our fathers were Republicans and we're Republicans. And that's the problem. We're Republicans, Democrats, Lutherans, and Catholics, and we're not practicing the law of God. And we ought to be monarchists, and we ought to be practicing the Ten Commandments and not the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, that's the bottom line. Now, of course, you got a choice to make, and you've probably made your choice, and that's fine. But as a reporter, I'm here to report on a story. The story that I'm reporting on is the contract. The contract's been breached. There's a penalty coming down. Get ready for it. Bend over. Grease her up good. Get ready. Now in verse 40, if they shall confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers with their trespass, which they have trespassed against me, and that also they have walked contrary to me. You know, if you wake up one day and you say, you know, maybe I've made a mistake here. Maybe communism wasn't as good as it was cracked up to be, as I thought it was. Maybe I ought to go back to practicing the Ten Commandments. Hey, God, I made a mistake. I think I'll come back home. Kind of like the prodigal son, you know. And you said, now you wake up to reality and you say, hey, look, I've made a mistake and I think I'll change that. Then you can expect reciprocity. And then it goes on and it says here in verse 41, and that they also have walked contrary, or that I have walked contrary to them, and that I have brought them into the land of their enemies. If then their uncircumcised hearts be humbled, and they then accept of the punishment of their iniquity, then will I remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and my covenant with Abraham, will I remember, and I will remember the land. Okay, I want to point this out. I mentioned to you, I think, last time, there's three contracts. You got a contract with Abraham, contract with Isaac, and a contract with Jacob. He identifies them right there. Now he's got a fourth contract with our forefathers at Mount Sinai. And each time he has reconfirmed his side of the bargain. He says, I'm going to give you rain in due season. I'm going to give you peace in the land. I'm going to give you great wealth. Everything that you put your hand to do will prosper, you know, and I'm going to give you all these neat things. Now, if you don't do this, I'll take the neat things away from you. And then if you walk contrary to me, then I'll punish you in fury. He starts off by saying, I'm going to lean on you seven times. Pretty soon he gets a little tougher and he says, now I'm going to lean on you. I'm going to punish you seven times. And I'll punish you in fury. Now, at some point in time, I would submit to you, at some point in time, you're going to wake up to this reality. And I just wanted to remind you of what reality is. And the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto is Alice in Wonderland BS. And the Ten Commandments is, in fact, reality. Now, if at some point in time in the future, as he points out here, he says, now when you're in your enemy's lands, and you've been deported from the United States, Canada, and Australia, and you find yourself in China, Bangladesh, or India, working under the taskmaster's whip, if you're one of the lucky one-third that survives it, in fear, wondering if you're going to live or die today, like the Jews did in the concentration camps. I wonder if I'm going to live or die today. Is it my turn to go into the oven? And he said, then if you confess your sin at that juncture of time, I might spare you. I might keep you alive. It's up to you. You ought to know that you got that option available. Now, if you got something on the ball here and you say to yourself, well, do I have to wait until I'm taken into national captivity and I'm on the verge of going into the ovens before I wake up to this? Maybe you could get started a little earlier. But you need to understand, this guy's going to have the only game in town. When this thing comes to pass here, this will be the only game in town to play. Might be a good idea to learn the rules right now. He says in verse 42, I'm going to remember my covenants with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the land also shall be left of them, and shall enjoy her Sabbaths while she lies desolate without them, and they shall accept of the punishment of their iniquity, because they despised my judgments because their soul abhorred my statutes. Now today, we Americans hate God, we hate the Ten Commandments, and we hate the law of God. We despise it, as evidenced by the fact that we threw it out of our public schools. We had a Supreme Court justice down in Alabama. His name is Roy Moore. Judge Roy Moore. He put the Ten Commandments in the Capitol building, or in the Supreme Court building. I assume it's the state Capitol building. Can you believe the audacity of a judge of the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama putting the Ten Commandments in a public place? Well, okay. But you know, our God said that that's what he wanted, and we got a little uppity and said, we're going to have separation of church and state. Well, okay, children, you got separation of church and state. You got what you want. Well, I'm just here to report that there's going to be a penalty come down for that. You can do these things for a while. I mean, you know, you can rob banks for a while. You know, you can kill people for a while. But at some point in time, you're going to get caught up with. And when you get caught up with, then comes the day of reckoning. It just seems to me to be a whole lot smarter not to rob banks and kill people. It just seems to me to be a whole lot smarter not to give God the finger to start with. You know, but then we've already made our bed. Now it's time to sleep in it. So the message here in Leviticus 26 is that you're obviously not smart enough to evade this punishment. So when the punishment comes upon you, assuming you're one of the survivors, because two out of three of you will already be dead, and your carcass is cast upon your idols. But if you're one of the one-third that's still alive, the objective is to reform you. If you can't be reformed by Hurricane Katrina, you can rest assured that by the time you get to the bottom of chapter 26, you will be reformed. You will be reformed or you will be dead. In which case, as old George Patton said, I forgot who he was referring to or talking to, but he was over in Germany, and he said, our job is to kill Germans. And we'll let God separate the goats from the sheep. And in the judgment, God will separate the goats from the sheep, and you can come up in the second resurrection, in the great white throne judgment, in Isaiah 65 and Ezekiel 37, and he'll deal with you at that time. But, you know, some of you people are going to be left alive. Not every one of you is going to end up dead. Verse 43, the land shall be left of them and shall enjoy your Sabbaths. Now remember that the purpose behind this is Sabbath breaking. You won't practice the Sabbath? Well then, there's a penalty. National captivity. Verse 44, and yet, for all of that, when they be in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, neither will I abhor them, to destroy them totally, and to break my covenant with them, because I am the Eternal their God. But I will, for their sakes, remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the heathen, that I might be their God, because I am the Eternal. Now these are the statutes and the judgments and the laws which the Lord made between him and the children of Israel in Mount Sinai by the hand of Moses. All right, so now you've got the Ten Commandments. You've got 749 statutes, accompanied by a number of judgments in that 749. Okay. Now, if you want a sample of a judgment, turn over to Numbers chapter 36, and there's a judgment. And it has the same force and effect of law as does a statute. I know people, they get kind of uppity about the Supreme Court legislating law, but then, you know, it's been that way in Anglo-Saxon administration for 3,300 years. I don't see any reason why it should change anytime soon. These are judgments, and when a judgment comes out of the Supreme Court, it becomes the rule by which we conduct ourselves from that point on. And that's what you're dealing with here. You've got the Ten Commandments, and then you've got statutes, and then you get judgments that construe those statutes. Now, most of you don't know anything about those, so let me just tell you that I wrote a book here called The Mosaic Law, in which I took all the laws of the Bible. and coupled them with all of the penalties. There's 28 penalties that go with those 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. If you commit adultery, the penalty is death. And if you break some other law, maybe the penalty for that is cutting off your hand. Or maybe the punishment is excommunication. Or maybe the punishment is something else. Maybe you get whipped. So there's different punishments for different crimes. And then God has laid all those out and said, here's what I'm going to do to you. Here's what I want you to do to one another. Here's the way I want you to conduct crime and punishment. And of course, we're a little smarter than God, and we came along and said, nah, we're not going to do that. We've got a different plan. Well, all right. Now notice he says, now for your different plan, I'm going to cast your dead carcasses upon your idols. No. If that's what you want to do and you made up your mind to it, well, then by golly, get after it. Then he went on, he pointed out, and he says, now if you can be reformed, then let's get after this reform, because you and I have a deal. And I pointed this out to you last time. I said, you know, if I was remodeling your kitchen, and in the terms of the contract, you called for number 10 wire, and I put in number 12 wire, and it comes down to payday, and you don't pay me, you know, then I'm in breach of contract. On the other hand, if you agreed to pay me a third down, a third at the halfway point, and a third at the end, and at the halfway point, you don't pay me half, and I don't come back and do any more work, it's because you're in breach of contract. You know, contracts require that both sides of the contract perform. You got to perform on the contract to get continued benefits from the other side. If you want to keep driving your Ford Explorer, you got to keep making the payments every month. And when you quit making the payments, they're going to come take it away from you. That's what the contract calls for, remember? Now, you don't have to be real smart to figure out that if you don't make the payments on your Explorer, they're going to come and repossess it. Now, you shouldn't have to be real smart to figure out if you renege on the terms and conditions of the contract that we have with our God, that He is going to foreclose on the contract. He's not going to perform His side, and on top of that, He's going to execute the penal clause. Now that's Leviticus chapter 26. Now flip over here to Deuteronomy chapter 28. And we got essentially the same story, but more detailed. And there's 30 prophecies here in the Bible, of which these are just two prophecies as to what He tells you He's going to do, you know, when there's a breach of contract. There are three other key prophetic books, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And Ezekiel is written directly to the United States of America. Directly. Isaiah and Jeremiah now deal with Israel and Judah, but Ezekiel is primarily aimed at Israel. And in fact, you know, a lot of times people, they get a little uppity, you know, and they say, well, we don't believe that. Well, okay, I don't care. You don't offend me. But what evidence do you have? You know, I listen to these people, you know, they come along and say, well, where's your evidence? I present proof and evidence with my stories. And guys come to me and they say, well, I don't believe that the United States is a part of Israel. I presented my evidence. Present your evidence that the United States isn't. Would you? Guys write me emails and they say, I don't believe it. Well, you know, that's like going into court and saying, well, I don't believe it. What we want is names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. When I come on the air, I produce names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. When I get emails, I listen to hearsay. I don't believe it. It doesn't even match up to the exceptions to the hearsay rules. You know, if you want proof, well, then I'm prepared to offer proof, and that's what I do here. And the Bible is an ancient document, and it's admitted into evidence under the ancient documents rule. I didn't come here to tell you I think you ought to believe it or that you ought to practice it. I'm a reporter. I came here to tell you, let me give you the information. You take the information, go prove it. You know, if you want to prove me wrong, get after it. Don't write me an email and say, hey, I don't believe it. I don't care what you believe. It's not important to me to convince you that I'm right. I don't have any duty to protect a fool from his folly. I don't have any duty to prove to you that you're wrong and I'm right, or vice versa. Just deliver the facts. Zol, remember that dragnet? Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. That's all I want. Chapter 28. Now notice here in chapter 28, it shall come to pass, if you shall diligently hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God to observe and to do all of his commandments. I covered this, remember, in first program. He says, all these blessings shall come on you and overtake you. This is essentially the same story that we just saw in Leviticus chapter 26. First 15 verses, or 14 verses. Notice here in verse 14, he says, you shall not go aside from any of the words which I command you this day, to the right hand or to the left, to go after other gods to serve them. He said, I'm going to give you my law. Don't you go after Ted Kennedy and Dianne Feinstein to follow the law of the United States. You follow my law. Yeah, we woke up one day and said, hey, you know, we don't think we want to do that. Well, okay, but before Dianne Feinstein and Ted Kennedy and Arlen Specter and George Bush, there was Moses and the Ten Commandments and our deal that we made at Mount Sinai. I mean, that was a deal that was ratified in blood. You know, just check Exodus 24, verse 8. The deal was ratified in blood. And that deal extends forever. And then we came along later and we said, well, we don't like that deal and we think we'll just change it unilaterally. Well, boys and girls, you can't do that. That's like going down and getting a driver's license and saying, well, I'm going to change the speed law unilaterally. I'm just going to drive 110. Well, okay, you know, go do that. But you can't change the speed law in your state or your country unilaterally. You can't change the terms and conditions of the contract from Mount Sinai of and by yourself. Now, if you think you can get after it and test it, it's what we call testing a law. If you want to test the constitutionality of a law, you go break the law in front of a cop. He arrests you, takes you to jail. You go into the courts and you say, wait a minute, I think this law is unconstitutional. This is Rosa Parks now. You got a law in the books that says blacks ride the back of the bus. Rosa Parks and the ACLU and the NAACP says it's time to challenge this law. We think it's unconstitutional. Rosa Parks rides the front of the bus. The bus driver calls a cop. The cop arrests her for riding the front of the bus. They haul her off to jail. This is a constitutional confrontation. It's the way the game is played. You go challenge the law. And the law was challenged all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And she lost at every level on the way up. She only won one battle and the only one that counted, and that was in Washington with the Supreme Court. Now we know blacks can ride the front of the bus. Got a new paradigm, got a new judgment now. That law had been on the books, by the way, in Alabama for 128 years. So 128 years of law is overturned with a judgment from the Supreme Court. Which, by the way, is a judgment. It's a system of Anglo-Saxon administration. It's been going on since 1329 B.C. So don't think that court judgments now is anything new. It's been around for years and years. But that's my point. Now, if you think you can change thou shalt not steal or thou shalt not commit adultery or remember the Sabbath day, and I guess that's what we're doing. We're challenging the law of God when we violate those laws. Now, God comes along and he tells you in two penal clause chapters, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Now, you do that, and here's what I'm going to do to you. So as a reporter, I thought, well, let me report on this story. Some of you people out there may want to clean up your act and say, well, gee, no, I don't want to take a risk. Now, before Rosa Parks, most blacks would ride the back of the bus. They simply said, I don't want to take the risk. I don't want to suffer the punishment that's going to come upon me for riding the front of the bus. Rosa Parks stepped right up and said, I'm prepared to run the risk. I'm prepared to break the law, to test it, to find out whether or not it's constitutional. Now, if you people want to violate the law of God to find out whether God exists, you want to test the law of God to find out whether or not God means what he says, test whether or not he's going to punish you in fury, test whether or not he's just whistling Dixie through a straw hat, get after it. Now, I'm a little more conservative than that. I took a look at this and I said, you know, this guy's flown off the handle more than once. For instance, you remember the Red Sea crossing when the Egyptians got after the Israelites there at the Gulf of Aqaba is where it really was, as they were crossing over into the Arabian Peninsula. The Pharaoh got a little uppity and he said, you know, I'm going out there and I'm gonna kill a bunch of them Israelites and bring them back. And God killed, according to Josephus, killed 450,000 Egyptians in 20 minutes in one afternoon. That doesn't sound like that this God is very kind. It doesn't sound like he's very gentle or he takes much guff off of anybody. This does not sound like sweet Jesus to me. Now, you know, you can construe this any way you want. 450,000 dead bodies floating up on the beach over there sounds serious to me. So I looked at that, and I looked at Noah's flood, where he killed everybody in the world save for 8 people. I looked at that, and it doesn't sound kind and doesn't sound very gentle to me. This guy sounds like he means business. So when I get here to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, I say, hey, if this guy is just half as serious as he was at Noah's flood and the Red Sea crossing over here, you know, this isn't any guy to be trifling with. Doesn't strike me as being the guy that we want to be giving the finger to. So in verse 15, he says, it's going to come to pass if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes, which I command you this day, that all of these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. Now this gets a little more detailed in this chapter 28 than is Leviticus 26. So next time we'll take it up here at chapter 28. This is Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 15, and we'll take a look with a particular scrutiny, step by step, verse by verse, as we go through here at the penal clause. Now remember, Leviticus 26 tells you here's how to avoid this if you're one of the survivors. I can tell you how to avoid it if you're alive and drawing breath today. You want to go back to practicing this law. This is the law that we Americans practiced before we adopted communism. This is the law that we Americans practiced at the Constitutional Convention in 1787, the Ten Commandments and the Law of God, not the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Hey, I'm out of time again. I got to leave it right there. So let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Well, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.